Beathard sets up deep in the pocket. Goes down the field for Smith. Ah, he got it! Smith! Touchdown, 85 yards, Iowa!
56-yarder. Does not have the leg. And Chris Davis takes it to the back of the end zone. He'll run it out to the 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Don't miss a thing from the world of college football. Stay right here for College Gridiron on WFUV Sports.
Welcome in to the first postseason episode of College Gridiron. We are post-championship weekend. It was quite the exciting weekend. We've seen the playoff revealed. We've had the Heismans revealed. It is quite the time in college football. It feels like we're getting to the end, but it feels like there's so much left to do, probably because there's still like a month left of the season. I'm Barrett Spreitzer, joined by Isabella Terracini and Thomas Tisdale. How are we doing today?
Today we're doing not too bad. Weather's kind of bad, but we do have the postseason to look forward to. Heismans are this weekend. Barrett, you'll be going. That's really exciting. Lot to look forward to. Lot to reflect on, though.
I mean, yeah, it was just a wild championship weekend for various reasons, and now we've sort of in this week where it's just sort of low-key, not too much drama with the playoff bracket, so it's been a pretty chill week. Not enjoying the weather outside so far, but other than that, it's been a pretty good week.
I would have to agree, and because it's been a pretty good week, we won't bore you and make your week worse. We'll jump right into this game because that's what you're here to listen to. You're here to listen to us talk football. So we'll start with everybody's favorite conference. We'll start with the SEC Championship game in which Georgia won 22-19. What are some reactions, hot takes, things you got to get off your chest that you saw during this game?
Not obviously my favorite game. I think this was a really defensively strong game, but 11 penalties, 8 coming in the first half. Sark's interview was really, it was kind of amusing. He was just like, well, I hope they call some of them out on them too. And then that was it. I personally would hate to be put in that position. But I do want to shed some more light. This was a really electric play to watch. The Carson Beck's fumble recovery and then just two laterals, and it was just like a crazy way to end the half. But overall, like, I could talk about this game forever, but I'll let it slide for right now. Keep the vibes high. It was a good test for both of these teams, way better than the first game, I will say. Going into overtime, when overtime started, I thought it was going to be like another 8 overtime kind of deal. It wasn't, thank God. I had other things to do, but I'm glad it's over, and both of them are going into the playoffs in pretty good spots, so you can't really complain.
Yeah, I just don't understand. I don't understand how Texas didn't win this game, especially with how dominant they were in like the first half in terms of like their defense. Just Georgia could not get anything going, and then Texas, like, they were moving the ball up and down the field, but for whatever reason, and we talked about this like with the Texas A&M game, they just couldn't get it into the end zone, and obviously some missed kicks left some points on the board there. But other than that, like, I mean, Georgia just showed incredible fight that I didn't really think we've seen throughout the season. I mean, maybe in the Georgia Tech game we saw that fight coming back in the second half, and maybe in the Alabama game. But when you're going down your starting QB and Carson Beck and Gunnar Stockton, who you have not seen, he's thrown like 4 passes this season, and then he comes in and he honestly like revitalized this offense in the second half. He led a touchdown drive to open up the second half, and then was mostly solid besides maybe the interception. So I think both teams, like, there's a lot of good things that happened for this Texas team. The defense looked good, but then there's just a lot of sloppy errors that ultimately cost them, and you just can't have those mistakes, especially when you're going into the postseason.
Yeah, I would agree. I think the biggest shock to me was probably this UT run game. I mean,
1.1 yards a carry.
Yeah, you had
the Georgia stoppage rate has greatly improved.
Wisner's coming off the best game he's had probably his whole career. He ran for like 100 and whatever, however many yards. And then he comes in and he barely averages 2 yards a carry against a defensive line that isn't as good as the A&M. Obviously, the defense overall is a better, but, I mean, the the fact that the UT offensive line just didn't, there was no fight from the UT offensive line in the run game. There was no dominance in the trenches. There's nothing that we've seen all year from this offensive line that's, you know, proved them as one of the best offensive lines in the country. They looked poor. There wasn't a whole lot. And then on top of that, in the passing game, you got Quinn Ewers just making some very questionable decisions. He threw the two interceptions, and then there was probably two or three more that were dropped that were, I mean, thrown right at the defender and weren't picked off. But some very bad decisions from Quinn Ewers. I mean, he threw for 360 yards or whatever it was, but like a 60% completion rate. It just wasn't a great game all around for this UT offense. The defense has to be feeling it because they've had two great games in a row, and the offense has really, really struggled. And then, you know, on the Georgia side, hats off to Gunnar Stockton. What he did, I mean, he's, I believe, a junior now, but, you know, he's been waiting in the wings for years, and he finally got his chance. Played well enough to secure the win. Obviously, Carson Beck came in on the last play of the game, barely able to move, but
it was just a handoff.
You know, that's all you have to do. If you can't move, just turn around and hand the ball off. We could talk about that last play of the game for a while because I'm not really sure how you allow that to happen. But I would say that Gunnar Stockton, if he has to play in the playoff, is a good enough quarterback from what we've seen for this Georgia defense to keep fighting out gritty games like this. With a couple weeks, though, off, a little bit of break, if Beck was good enough to go in the game to hand the ball off, you have to imagine he'll be able to play in some capacity.
Yeah.
You know, whether he's going to be able to go out and throw the ball 40 times a game, probably not. But, you know, it looks hopeful that he'll be able to play in some sort of capacity. So that's a good sign for Georgia. UTA, they got to figure something out on the offensive side of the ball.
I think what I've heard a lot of, like, controversy between who's going to be the quarterback starting in the postseason.
It's going to be Quinn.
I think it's going to be Quinn, but I think he might be taken out pretty early and substituted for Arch just because based on completion rate and efficiency in the red zone, there has to be some sort of communication. There has to be some sort of realization that it's good to kind of mix it up a little bit. We've seen some great plays from Arch. We've seen some poor plays from both of them. It's good to get some reps in for both of them. I do see Arch getting some passes down.
Well, the other thing I don't understand is they used Arch Manning like every time they got in the red zone against A&M. Arch Manning played like 15 snaps or something like that. And then I think he was on the field maybe three times in this game against Georgia. Like, you've already shown it. Use it. It worked very well. Arch Manning is a dynamic athlete. Whether or not you trust him at this stage in his career to, you know, go win the game with his arm, he's a very good passer. Whether you trust the decision making, whatever. But if he's going to go out and run the ball, he's going to go run the read option. Use him. Just keep the defense thinking, especially with Quinn Ewers the injured ankle, and he's basically a statue right now. Why not, you know, use that little wrinkle of Arch Manning be able to run? Arch Manning ran the ball one time. I think he was on the field maybe two other times, maybe, to hand the ball off or whatever. It just, for that, you know, that whole package to be utilized so heavily in the A&M game and then just completely disappear, especially when the offense is struggling, doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, the main issue with this Texas offense, and you can talk about who should be at quarterback, but the issue is that they can't run the ball. And especially with Ewers not being able to scramble or run option or whatever. I mean, you'd like to see Archie Manning sort of get more looks where he can show something a little different than what this Texas offense has been offering over the past two games. And I think it was just really easy for the Georgia Bulldog team to just sit back and just pressure the quarterback. I mean, they got, what was it, like six sacks against Quinn Ewers, and he's being asked to throw the ball 46 times, which is just not sustainable. I mean, he's a college quarterback. He's human. He's going to make mistakes. He's going to make bad throws. And if you just can't get the running game going, there's just really no hope against a good defense, which is this Georgia team.
That is another benefit, though, of this couple-week break there. Quinn Ewers can get healthy. Hopefully Jaden Blue can get back healthy, because if
and Kelvin Banks. He sat out this past game, and
That was a big deal, but I would also – Jaden Blue, I think, is going to be the difference between in this huge Texas help in offense because he is a very good running back. Obviously, Quintrevion Weisner had – you know, he's had a good stretch of weeks here. Well, not so much in the championship game, but before that he was playing quite well. But if UT is going to be able to run the ball, it's going to be behind. It's going to be you know, on the legs of Jaden Blue because he is their best running back. He was having a very good year before he went down, and then you know this year this game he got 2 carries. You know, maybe he had 2 yards, but 2 carries in a. It's not like you went down early and you're trying to come back from you know down 20 and you got to throw the ball 46 times. They still only ran the ball 28 times. Well. I think that's not even true because, you know, the Quinn Ewers sacks are in there. They get factored. But, you know, between Archman and Jaden Blue and Quintrevion Weisner, they had 22 carries. So I put the ball on the ground and let's see what happens, right? You know, all it takes is one big run. And, you know, maybe the offensive line didn't look very great in the run defense, but... asking Quinn Ewers to throw the ball 46 times is...
when you have Arch Manning sitting on the sidelines,
you know,
it's a lot to ask.
Regardless of what you want, regardless of who your quarterback is, neither Arch Manning nor Quinn Ewers is going to win games throwing the ball 46 times against that type of defense, right? It's a good enough secondary for Georgia to give you problems. It's the UT receiving core is good, but you're still asking them to get open 50 times. Like, that's a big ask. And It's going to be an interesting couple of weeks for UT to trying to find themselves on offense here because it's an interesting thing to point out is they've had their best offensive games against the worst teams they've played, and the best teams they've played, they've had by far their worst offensive games. And, you know, every team you play from here on out is the best team you've played, or you have to at least treat it like that. And so they've got to find some sort of culture, some sort of... something on offense that doesn't look like the last 2 weeks, because the last 2 weeks have been absolutely just pitiful on the UT offense. So is that anyone else have anything to add on the SEC championship game?
No.
No? You said you could go on for hours. I know you have more.
I could, but we've got a lot more to talk about. The world does not revolve around the SEC.
Well, if you ask Alabama, it does.
Well, I mean, coming from 3 kids who grew up in the South, I think we've got a lot more than just the SEC.
We'll see.
Personally,
I would agree.
No bias, though.
No bias. So we'll go from the South to maybe the conference people up here care a little bit more about, or at least people in the Midwest definitely care a little bit more about. We'll talk about the Big Ten championship in which Oregon won 45-37. I think it was maybe a little bit more convincing a win than the scoreboard showed for Oregon. You know, Penn State showed some fight though, so. What do you got, Thomas? What do you got for this game?
I'm honestly surprised with how well the Penn State offense played. You know, they're known and they're notorious for not showing up, especially on the offensive end and in big games. And, you know, they put up 37 points against one of the best teams in the country, if not the best team in the country. So you have to be incredibly proud of that. But the defense, which, I mean, Penn State prides itself on, just was not there tonight. I mean, Dylan Gabriel just played fantastic. And if there wasn't Gentee and Travis Hunter in front of him for the Heisman, I think you have to put him as the Heisman for this season because he's just been efficient. And we talked about it's sort of a contrast with this Texas offense and that they can run the ball really well and they can also throw the ball really well. And it's all efficient. They have chunk plays, but they can also be methodical and have these sort of long 10 to 15 play drives in which they score a touchdown. The outlook for both of these teams is extremely positive going into the playoffs. No big injuries on either side, last time I checked. And so you have to be proud of both teams' performance.
I think starting off the game with 5 drives ending in scores just says a lot about this matchup. I wasn't as surprised. I knew Penn State was going to put up a really strong fight. And I'm glad that they did. Like, they were able to like keep it even, keep it pretty close throughout the game. This is a really good attempt from Penn State to take the, you know, undefeated Ducks down. And 82 combined points in the Big Ten, I don't know if that's ever happened before, but it's a pretty stellar thing. And it was well played, looking at it from being more composed, both sides of the ball, not that many penalties and loss of yardage. It was overall a really well played football game.
I would agree for sure. I think Penn State definitely made it look a lot closer than it was in the fourth quarter. They were down 38-24 or maybe 45-24 at one point. I don't quite remember how that fourth quarter scoring got kicked off, but you know, and this is the thing I've been saying about Penn State a lot, is I think there's 100% the talent. I don't necessarily know if there's the execution from Penn State in allowing. I mean, you go down early in or big-ish, right, in the second half. The second half, really, until probably the last 8 minutes of that fourth quarter, you looked lost. It was very bad. Drew Aller threw two interceptions. He finished the game barely above 50% completion. A lot of those incompletions were in the second half. Right, you go into half down three, and then you go into the fourth quarter looking like you're getting blown out. It's a rough spot. Obviously, they scored 13 in the fourth, but I think there was flashes of what this Penn State team really is, in that it's an average team that has lost the big games they've played to win, and they needed to win. Right, they lost to Ohio State, they now lost to Oregon. They play, who do they play?
SMU.
SMU. They play SMU. So I think Penn State is actually a very similar team to SMU in that, you know, they played some maybe not so great teams, and then the great teams they have played, they've lost to. I've said it all year, I don't think Drew Aller's good. I think he's kind of showed that today, in that there's an insane amount of talent there. He's got one of the craziest arms in the country. He makes some of the prettiest throws in the country. But his accuracy leaves a lot to be desired. His decision making leaves a lot to be desired. His legs are off and on good, right? He's got some mobility, but he takes some really stupid sacks too. And that's some of that decision making that I think is pretty questionable already that I mentioned. It's just, if you can't tell, I'm very much not high at all on this Penn State team. I'm almost a little bit shocked that Oregon played a game in which you could say it was close. I personally don't think, when you saw those two teams on the field together, I don't think they looked like they were in the same class, regardless of the scoreline. I think there were maybe a little bit of there was some defensive miscues on Oregon's part for some of those touchdowns. There was that one just beautiful throw from Drew Aller over the middle for that touchdown. But otherwise, just, Penn State looked completely outclassed regardless of the scoreline. I think regardless if they win against SMU, I just don't see this Penn State team as a contender. You know, even though I'm sure a lot of people say that, you know, the top three contenders are in the Big Ten this year, I just don't see it. And I'm just waiting for this Penn State team to get exposed. And you could argue they did already when they lost to Ohio State, but there's a lot there in this Penn State team that I think is gonna, I should say, there isn't much there in this Penn State team. You know, it's gonna disappear in the playoff because, well, that's what Penn State always does.
I think that this SMU game is being played at Penn State is gonna be a big boost. Also, it being their whiteout.
Did you see that there's like a big controversy with the student tickets for this Penn State game?
No.
So the NC or the playoff committee obviously has kind of a say on what student tickets can do, or how many student tickets you can sell. So they agreed to, I think, 21,000. And then Penn State just didn't sell all their student tickets. Like enough students requested it, but then I think Penn State just didn't grant it to them because they wanted to sell the tickets instead. So there was, I think, like half the students that requested tickets didn't end up getting them.
Sad.
I know.
Would never happen at Fordham. Just
Fordham would never sell out
the
stadium.
Fordham would never.
We could never sell out a stadium here.
But I don't know if that, like, white out Penn State, like, energy is going to deter SMU.
You think they white out the playoff game?
It is white out.
It is?
I mean, they have to make it, right? I mean, it's like a home playoff game. Like, you have to make it your white out game, right?
Yeah. I don't know why they had it so late, because, like, they weren't guaranteed a spot.
Well, they
from the beginning.
They did their wideout against, I think, Ohio State. It was just a day game, so it was kind of pointless.
But I just don't see... I think SMU takes this over Penn State.
Okay, I mean, I disagree, but, like, to be fair, Penn State did have an opportunity to tie the game, like, late. Drew Aller threw the interception, and obviously that lost them the game. But you can talk about how inefficient, like, Drew Aller has been throwing two interceptions, but pretty much every college quarterback, outside maybe Dylan Gabriel and Cam Ward, who's not even in the playoffs, has been inconsistent.
Yeah, but the way they talk about Drew, they talk about Drew Aller like he's the next guy. He's, you know, a top five quarterback in the country, and he's just...
He's an
arguably not a top 30 quarterback in the country. Arguably not a top 50 quarterback in the country.
I don't think he's
very good. He makes some really boneheaded decisions. He makes some really bad throws.
But he is.
And granted, his arm talent is insane, but the accuracy's terrible. I just don't think he's good. And the way people talk about him, it's aggravating to listen to.
I mean, this Penn State team doesn't need him to be great. He just needs to be good. And I think there are expectations that Aller puts on himself that he needs to be great and needs to make all these throws just because they've played an Oregon team where you have to put up 46 points to win. But I think Penn State is there's enough talented people around him, and obviously they have a good enough defense that Drew Aller, if he chooses to be efficient, and I think I'm saying the same thing with like Carson Beck and Quinn Ewers, is that as long as they're efficient and they make smart throws and they don't need to throw the ball 45 times a game, then I think they both have a path to success. And then I think Penn State, I think by losing this game, has an easier path to at least the Final Four. I mean, they've got to be an SMU team who, I mean, outside of the Clemson game, hasn't really been challenged. So I think that could cost them, especially in a hostile environment like
Whiteout Penn State.
I mean, that's probably the most daunting stadium you can go into and play a game. And then Boise State, who, they challenged Oregon in week two of the season, but outside of that, also hasn't really played any good elite teams. So I think Penn State, if they're efficient with the ball and the defense suddenly finds its magic back, which they just didn't have against Oregon, I think you can see them in a matchup versus either Georgia or Notre Dame.
Ooh, I would love to see them play Georgia.
Yeah, I would definitely agree that they kind of got gifted a significantly easier path than definitely Oregon did. And, you know, Oregon, we'll talk about it a little bit later, what we think of the college football playoff. But, you know, Oregon is going to have to play either Ohio State or Tennessee and then either, you know, Texas, Clemson, or Arizona State to get to the championship game. But versus Penn State's SMU and Boise State. But, you know, maybe they lucked out losing, but Oregon's the number one team in the country for a reason.
Yeah.
I don't think they care. They wanted that number one and they came out and they got it. So it is what it is. We'll see. I think Drew Aller is going to get exposed again. But moving on to what I personally think was the best game of the weekend, or at least of the Power Four championship games, the ACC championship game in which Clemson, on a last-minute field goal, won 34-31 over SMU. We'll start with you, Isabella. What do you got?
This is Clemson's eighth ACC championship, so just like hats off to them. But for SMU's first year in the ACC, they definitely did pull their stuff together, locked in, and just, like, dove headfirst and came out pretty, like, not too bad. I will give my hats off to this SMU team. The first quarter didn't look too great for them, but then they came back. They tied it up. They got 17 points, and they tied it up at 31, and then it just ended off in that field goal. I think this team definitely is playoff ready. Going in, playing Penn State, they do have that mind mentality, you know, together. And they're making okay decisions. I really do like Kevin Jennings, play, and Brashard Smith. Like those guys, like, they are really good players. I think Cade Klubnik, he's like, I don't know how he's gonna do against Texas. That's a toss-up in my eyes, but SMU, I think this was a really good matchup, SMU and Clemson. I did like seeing the Mustangs just, like, come back really late. It was electric.
Yeah, I mean, going into that, into the halftime, I mean, they're down 24-7. And in all honesty, if they don't come back and make it at least close, then SMU is probably out of the playoffs just because the committee loves Alabama and is just trying to find any way to put them in. But I think that they basically played that second half like a playoff game. Like, their season was on the line. They absolutely had to make it close to make it a competitive game and to make the playoffs. And so they went on a run, and, you know, obviously I don't think anyone really expected the Clemson kicker to make a 56-yard field goal. So hats off to him. That was really impressive.
Freshman kicker, too.
I know. It's just like, I mean, the announcers just announced
one of the crazy, like, one of the coolest things you'll ever see. Like, in call it very, like, embodies college football. That'll be a moment remembered at Clemson, definitely in the ACC.
Maybe that'll get added to the college gridiron intro pretty soon.
It could. I mean, that was a pretty cool play.
It was really electric.
But anyways, like, the SMU team, I think they're, I mean, they have the offense and they have shown sort of glimpses of a good defense, but I just don't think they've played enough really tough games, and this Clemson team isn't really at the level of a playoff team. I mean, they're ranked 16th in the country, and like 2 weeks ago, they like basically had no hope of making the playoffs, and they got lucky with Miami losing to Syracuse. So I just don't think this SMU team just doesn't have that sort of elite level play that teams need to make it. I mean, maybe if Penn State just chokes in a big game again, then maybe they can sneak into the second round. But I mean, besides that, I just don't think this SMU team has quite enough to make a serious run at the playoff championship.
I would agree. The only thing I would say about SMU is that they have Kevin Jennings, and when you get into, you know, this kind of territory in college football, if you have the best quarterback on the field, more often than not, you're going to win. And Kevin Jennings is, I think, undoubtedly better than Drew Aller, in my personal opinion, at least as a college quarterback, whatever you want to say about Drew Aller's potential. But this year, I think Kevin Jennings is the better, the more electric, the more college football quarterback over Drew Aller. So I think that could be what gives them the bump. Although, going on the road, who knows?
Going to Penn State whiteout.
Going
white.
To Penn State.
It's hard, but,
you know, again.
You got that week off to
James Franklin also. James Franklin, bad big game coach. So we'll see. I do want to talk about Clemson, though, for one glaring reason. And it's Phil Maffa, who I'm a big hater. I think he's a horrible running back. He's not very good. I feel like every time I watch, you look at his stats, and he's like, oh, he averages 5 yards a carry. But I feel like every time I watch, he goes down at the first sign of contact. He looks slow. He had 13 carries for 28 yards. He can't get away from the first defender. I feel like every carry he has is 2 yards and he goes down immediately. You look at his stats and he has, you know, I think like 1,100 yards or whatever it is. He averages 5 yards a carry. But the last 3 years, every time I watch him, it looks like he is the worst player on the field no matter who they play. And he just continues to get the ball. And it's just, there has to be someone in that Clemson running back room who is better than him. Or if there's not, but we got to have a conversation about your running back recruiting, because it's like, what happened? Where is the Travis Etienne? Where are all of Deshaun Watson's running backs? And how are you giving Cade Klubnik Phil Maffa, who I swear runs like a 4.7 40? He is so slow. He can't break a tackle. Like, he's slow and he can't break a tackle. I don't really understand what he brings, but you know, they're gonna keep running him out there, and he's gonna keep going down. But if Clemson can't run the ball, you know, it's Cade Klubnik is a very predictable passer, right? He doesn't have the most insane arm. He's accurate enough, and he makes really good decisions. But, you know, if he can't rely on his arm talent, if his running back isn't, if the threat of the run isn't there, right? He's a very good play-action quarterback, very similar to, like, a Jared Goff with a little bit more mobility. But, again, you need that play-action to be there, and if Phil Maffa is not a threat at all, you can just kind of sit back and wait for Cade Klubnik to throw you the ball and make a play on it, which it really could be an issue against Texas if they can't run the ball.
I mean, to be fair, Texas also can't run the ball, so it might just be like,
it's just going to be an up-in-the-air game.
Yeah, it could be Cade Klubnik and Quinn Ewers combined for 100 passes.
I'm actually so excited for this game as a Texas high school football fan versus Clemson and UT, the Cade versus Quinn rematch. But we'll get a little bit more into that when we talk college football playoff. Anything else from this thrilling game that
Excited.
Walk-off 56-yard field goal from the freshman. It's so insane. That's I love it so much.
Great way to start off your career.
I mean, just wow. That's he'll probably go on to miss like 15 kicks in a row or something, and Clemson fans will hate him forever, but it's a good story for now.
Yeah.
Another great story is Arizona State in the Big 12 winning 45-19 over Iowa State. Kenny Dillingham is a finalist nominee for the National Coach of the Year. Cam Scatterwell gets snubbed from a Heisman finalist. But Arizona State's got all the momentum right now. They're looking great. Can anyone stop Cam Scatterwell? Who knows? We'll find out in a couple, like a month it feels like. But Arizona State, I think actually we sat here last week, I think a week ago exactly, and said that we all thought Arizona State was going to kind of run away with this game, and they did.
Absolutely. ISU went on a very long scoring drought, allowing 5 touchdowns and 3 from Scatterwell. This is Arizona State's first conference title since 1996 in the Pac-12. I watched this game.
They were predicted to finish dead last in the Big 12.
They were.
Preseason.
They were, and they proved themselves. They proved the playoff, the committee, whoever writes that stuff, very wrong. Which, period, as you should. I can't lie. This game was fun to watch until like halfway through the second quarter when it was just like, ISU just kind of fell apart and ASU just picked up all the pieces and ran with it. And I mean, ran with it. Sam Levitt was electric with the pass. Iowa State kind of just couldn't keep up. And I think we kind of talked about that, how it wasn't going to be an easy stop game. And you know what? We were right. So that's all I got.
I mean, we predicted it last week that if ASU could get out to an early lead and just run the ball, hand the ball to Scatterwell, then they would run away with it. And we saw that. I mean, we thought maybe it'd be close in like the first quarter where Iowa State struck first with the touchdown. But I mean, after that, it was pretty much all ASU, and Iowa State just did not have an answer on offense. And credit to the ASU quarterback, Sam Levitt.
Yeah.
I mean, he was incredibly efficient. I remember that one play where it was like 4th and 1 and they decided to go play action. Instead of handing the ball off, they threw it. I think it was like a 50-yard pass and set up an ASU touchdown just a couple plays later. But like those type of plays, like those type of big plays is something that's going to lend ASU, it's going to be something great for ASU come playoff time, is the ability to make big throws and lean on the run, but also just know when to mix it up and throw those play action. And I mean, we've seen it with an Iowa State defense, which has mostly been good this season, where once ASU gets going, once that offense gets going, it's really hard to stop. And I just don't and they have time to rest up, but when they play this Texas team, it's going to be an incredible matchup between a ASU very explosive offense versus a Texas offense or a Clemson offense that's sort of just been lulling, especially in the second half of the season.
Yeah, for sure. I honestly don't have a whole lot to say about this game. It's other than Arizona State is, I don't know, this might be a little bit offensive, but I feel like they're like a better Boise State, right? They've got the elite running back, you know, 1-2 in the country, however you want to see it, but they've got a quarterback who is very good for what the team needs them to do, right? Be good at the play action, be able to move a little bit, be able to make the accurate throw and hit the throw when you need. Arizona State's defense is definitely better than Boise State's, and they always have more talent, but it's going to be interesting when Arizona runs into some of these playoff defenses to see what happens, because obviously, you know, there have been some good defenses, much better defenses in the Big 12 this year than we've seen in the past. But, I mean, some of these playoff defenses are some of the elite, you know, talent, elite coach units in the nation. And so we'll see if what they can bring against Scatterwell, because similar to Boise State, if that run game gets stopped, it is going to be a long day for ASU. But, I mean, I think every team that played championship weekend ended up making the playoff. No, except for Iowa State, right? We literally just talked about them. Good job. Every team but Iowa State that played in a Power Four championship game made the playoff, which is fun. We didn't think that was going to happen for a little bit, right? If Georgia had lost, maybe they miss out because they would have been three losses. If SMU lost, most people thought they were going to miss out. They sneak in over an Alabama team who you could discuss what you think should have happened there. I don't know if any of us think Alabama should have gotten in over SMU. Looks like Thomas might.
I mean, I think Alabama is a better team than SMU, but you also just can't complain with 12 teams making the playoffs. You can't complain with three losses being like, oh, we should have making the playoffs and we would have won if like we made it. Like,
yeah.
There's enough room for error in a 12-team playoff where you really just can only blame yourself for losing to a 6-6 Oklahoma team and a 6-6 Vanderbilt team who lost to Georgia State. So, mm-hmm. Really no complaints from Alabama. So
it's, yeah, I mean, it's my favorite comment from Alabama fans is that there's no reason to schedule anyone tough. When they played Mercer 3 weeks ago, like you're playing Mercer in November and you're talking about scheduling people tough, you always have these like cupcake FCS games, and usually you don't play anyone Power Five. You know, you played UT last year, but they don't. It's not like Alabama plays these super challenging out of conference opponents, anyway. So that's a funny, especially when you didn't. None of your losses came to those out of conference. They came in conference to bad conference teams, which I think is funny. And they're saying what they're using it to say is that strength of schedule doesn't matter. When you can argue the only reason a 9-3 team is even in the conversation is because of their strength of schedule, right? There's the opponents they played were so good that it makes up for those losses. And so that's why they were, you know, right on the outside. And I think that's probably what Alabama and probably the SEC as a whole, because it seems like all the SEC fans are saying they should have been in. And that's what they're failing to see is you have three losses. No matter what your strength of schedule is, the only reason you're in the conversation is because of who you've played and who you've beat. But you can't lose to a Vandy and a really bad Oklahoma team and expect to make it, you know, regardless of who SMU's played or who SMU, I guess, hasn't played.
I think what the biggest thing is that this is Alabama. Like, this is, like, sort of a dynasty almost. Like,
yeah, but you can't. It's,
but they're not anymore.
Exactly.
Like, they were, which is why
this is a playoff for
think.
This year. It's a playoff for this year. I don't care what you did last year. I don't care if you won 57 straight championships. If you suck this year, you suck this year, right? Like,
it's not that deep.
I mean, Nebraska's one of the greatest teams of all time. I don't see anyone saying, hey, they should be in because they're Nebraska. No, it's because Alabama, who arguably shouldn't have gotten in last year, and they did, and then definitely shouldn't have gotten in this year. They didn't, but, you know,
Alabama fans are just different.
Ultimately, I think the committee got it right. Maybe you could argue some seeding. Maybe you could. I think what a lot of people are having issues is giving the top 14 or top four conference winners byes, because you end up in the situation like we talked about earlier, where Boise State gets the bye, and now Oregon has to go through either Tennessee, Ohio State, Texas, Clemson, or Arizona State to get to the national championship, whereas Penn State has to beat an SMU team who a lot of people don't think deserve to be there, a Boise State team who, you know, they're the group of five team that got in, and then a Georgia team who, are we really, we don't know, but, you know, Georgia's a good team, but if all you have to play is Georgia versus Oregon, the gauntlet that they're going to have to run through,
yeah.
You know, Texas now, they lose, and instead of having to play a Notre Dame team, they get to play a weaker Clemson team and then maybe a weaker Arizona State team. So I think a lot of people, their issue is with giving the top four conference champions a bye, and that being the guaranteed top four, as you know, you end up with teams that have significantly better seasons than other teams getting significantly harder paths. But, you know, I feel like it's nitpicking. I feel like we're going to have a couple really good games. I've seen people say that this first round is going to be bad, and I just don't see that.
I think it's going to be interesting.
You know what? Let's run through some predictions. We'll just do quick predictions for this first round.
We kind of already did some, but
yeah, but
sure.
We'll start with the 8-9 matchup, which I think is going to be just an absolutely fireworks, electric game, unless Ohio State plays like it's Michigan. But Ohio State against Tennessee at Ohio State, it's going to be I think this is going to be like embody what college football is. I'm very excited for this game. I think Ohio State's going to take it, but it'll be an exciting one.
I'm from Tennessee, so I think I have to choose Tennessee, but I'm also really excited for this game. Like in previous years where you've had only four teams, you've had moments where teams underperform and the game becomes a blowout and it's just not fun to watch, and maybe you get one good game out of the three played. But like this one, like let's say the Texas-Clemson game is an absolute blowout, but you still have three other great games to look forward to. So I think that's just the main positive I've had with this playoff sort of expansion. And then, I mean, you can argue about the seeding, but that's just, I think we're nitpicking
that's
at that point.
That's getting nitpicky,
exactly. Yeah, and
I mean,
we played
12 games at this point. Like, we've seen what we've seen, right? Like, it's...
Yeah, the game should be competitive no matter what, and the teams are relatively good enough. It's not like you've had a... It's not like there's a 6-6 conference championship suddenly has the four seed, and so the path for Texas is easier. So, like, I think the teams are good enough that the games are going to be competitive enough, and, I mean, there is a possibility for upsets.
I completely agree with what you're saying. You kind of took the words right out of my mouth. I also have to agree with you that Tennessee takes this one only because I think Ohio State has kind of been, you know, a little bit proved fraudulent, if so to speak. But I think being the 8-9 seed, this is definitely going to be a big watch. I like this matchup. I think this is going to be a good one. And I think with this new expanded playoff, it's brand new. It's obviously has some wrinkles and some kinks to work out, and that's just going to come with, you know, in the coming years. I think they were talking about expanding it to 14 teams, which I don't think is the best idea.
Let's let it sit for a little bit.
Yeah, I think we have to work out the current kinks now before we can change anything else. But overall, I'm not mad with the rankings. I think they are pretty fair. It's really nice to not see Alabama in, which is what makes me really happy. And to see SMU in, I haven't seen them in a hot minute. So this is going to be a really good couple weeks coming up to lead in right into bowl season. I mean, good times coming ahead.
And just one quick thing about the Tennessee-Ohio State game, and I know we're critiquing James Franklin for not being a big game coach, but like Ryan Day is also in consideration.
Which is, I feel like, something we've been saying for weeks. Like, I feel like Ryan Day's horrible big game record is something that might have been mentioned 6 or 7 episodes in a row because it is just that notable and that horrendous. But I saw something on Twitter where it was like, if Ryan Day doesn't beat Tennessee and then Oregon, and then if he doesn't beat the number 9, the number 1, the number 4, and then the number 2 team in the country in a row, he's going to lose his job.
Which is just insane.
I think he's losing his job regardless.
He's
not going to win the national title.
I mean, but what if he does?
But
does that shut everyone up? I feel like
it might. It might shut everybody up.
Next year, even if he wins the national title, Ohio State fans are just going to be like, he still sucks.
Yeah.
As soon as he goes like 10-2 next year. Because that's
2-10 next year.
He won't go 2-10. That'd be outrageous. Then I think the whole state of Ohio needs to shut down the university if they go 2-10.
Miami of Ohio gets everything.
Did you see that there's an Ohio State representative that wants to ban planting the flag in the middle of the Ohio State stadium, which is just so incredibly petty for a team that like should have beaten Michigan and just showed up.
Yeah, you know how you don't get your flag planted?
You win a game.
Exactly.
It's not that hard and it's not that deep.
So I'm looking forward to Tennessee also planting a flag on Ohio State on the O. So
I think they should definitely do that.
Yeah.
Moving on to the Indiana Bowl, we've got Indiana against Notre Dame. I think this will be this could be an interesting one. Indiana, a lot of people say, are maybe not that great. Notre Dame obviously lost to NIU. There's a lot going on in this game, and it could be a really exciting one, or it could be a really boring, 14-7 game because Notre Dame decides not to play any offense, but also has a significantly better defense than Indiana. You know? Like, it's an interesting one, but I'm excited to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I think this Indiana team is quite fraudulent. I mean, they just haven't played anyone good besides Ohio State, and they got blown out by Ohio State. But they did beat Michigan, so I guess that sort of counteracts.
You know who didn't beat Michigan?
Ohio State.
So, you know, who's the real winner here?
Yeah.
But anyway, this Notre Dame team, besides that loss to Northern Illinois or whatever, has been playing like one of the best teams in the country since that, and they've like sort of just been on a revenge arc since then. So I just like don't see any way that Indiana can go into South Bend. It's probably going to be like 10 degrees, and I just don't see a way that the Hoosiers can come out with a win against a really good Notre Dame team.
Totally agree. The last time that Indiana beat Notre Dame was in 1950. That's crazy. Indiana has lost 20 of the last 21 matchups. This is the first matchup since 1991. And I agree. I don't think that this Indiana team can beat Riley Leonard and this Notre Dame defense. This is a defense that is honestly one of the best that I've seen in a while from Notre Dame. And they've been in the top 10 for a pretty long time. I'm going to go Notre Dame here pretty easily.
I would agree. The only thing I have to add to that is just shout out Indiana's administration. They're moving up their winter commencement. So moving up graduation for winter grads so that everyone can watch the game.
That's so cute.
And I feel like there was a lot of people in the comments of that like, oh, who cares about the stupid football game? All the nerds graduating early, you know, screw you. This is the biggest thing that's ever happened on that campus. Shut up and go watch a football game. It's going to be cold anyways. Who goes to commencement in winter? Whatever. Shut up and go watch football, nerds. That's all I have to say about that. We'll move quickly on to two schools that really do care about football. We'll talk about SMU and Penn State real quick. We've talked, honestly, quite extensively on this one already. I think we all agree, Penn State. But I do just want to say that if Kevin Jennings can show some of the flashes and, you know, elite college quarterback we've seen out of him, it could be at least an interesting game, if not a good game.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be the blowout that sort of everyone makes it to be. I think Jennings is going to have a fantastic game, but I think Penn State's just too talented to lose to an ACC SMU team that just lost. So, yeah, there's really not much else to say. I think Drew Aller is going to play well enough to get the win. Is he going to play fantastic? No.
No, he never does.
Yeah, so I think this Penn State just has enough to sort of just overwhelm this SMU team with speed, size, and strength. And yeah, I think that's just going to be the story of the game, and they're playing at home. So I think Penn State just has this one.
You're going to hate what I have to say here.
Oh, no. You think SMU is going to win?
I do. And here's why. I just think that there's such a big chip on their shoulder being, you know, coming into this as, you know, not really favored. I mean, the spread right now is, I think, 9 favored for Penn State. I'm rooting for this upset. But I always root for upsets. So like, what it really is my
there's
is
not a
my
person
take.
On this planet that loves upsets more than you.
No, I don't think so. I just really want to see Kevin Jennings outdo Drew Aller. I think Breshard Smith can absolutely outdo Singleton, and this is a game that it really does matter, and I'm excited to watch it and be rooting for our home state.
You're hyping it up all this. It could be bad, but hey, maybe not. Maybe not. And maybe you'll laugh in my face.
And maybe you'll laugh in mine. I don't know.
Probably not. I mean, it's not that big of a prediction to say it's going to be Penn State. But, you know, if SMU wins,
I won't laugh in your face.
I will allow you to say I told you so.
I'm not going to be mean about it.
Maybe. Probably not.
I'm not a mean person.
You'll never see me again. I won't be laughed at. I'll just disappear off the face of the earth so I don't get laughed at.
See, okay, I'm not going to say
that. Clemson versus UT. Quinn Ewers versus Cade Klubnik.
High school buddies coming back.
Actually, not high school buddies. High school rivals. High school rivals. They played in the state championship game in Texas in 2021.
But I think everybody from Texas should be buddies.
Yeah, but, you know, they were the at one point they were the 1-2 quarterback in the class of 2022 before Quinn Ewers reclassed to 2021. You know, the Southlake Carroll versus Austin Westlake kind of rivalry that was there for a little bit, two of the historic programs in Texas high school football. Quinn Ewers or Cade Klubnik comes back to Texas for this game. There's going to be a lot of people kind of, I think, rooting for both sides. Obviously, Klubnik is from Austin. A lot of storylines there against his former teammate, Michael Taft, who's kind of the heart and soul of this Texas defense. There's a lot going on in this game. I think there's a lot of great storylines. I think Texas is probably going to win by, I won't say 20 because I don't know if they score 20, but I think they'll
Spread's 11.
Yeah, and it might be 11 to nothing at that point.
You never know.
That's
that.
All I gotta say.
That offense is.
There's
it,
so many.
We don't know what's going on.
There's so many storylines and so much fun stuff that could happen in this game that I think it's gonna be like 14-6.
It might just not be football. It might just straight up.
It could
up
be really ugly. 17-7 A&M UT recap.
Maybe 8 overtimes. I don't know.
8 overtimes would be exciting at least.
Yeah.
But I don't know if Texas could score a 2-point conversion.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, these are two teams that can't run the ball, so I think it's going to be...
It's just going to be in the air.
All throwing, I think there's going to be 8 interceptions. It's going to be a fun game, and I think both because of the storylines and both because these are dysfunctional offenses that think they should be scoring 35 a game but just aren't, so I think they're going to be unnecessarily aggressive, especially Clemson coming into a hostile environment. So I think it's just going to be a good game because there's just going to be a lot of throwing, a lot of action, and yeah, I think this is like... a perfect game.
I'm sorry for my Twitter in advance.
Just putting
that out there.
Well, yeah. It's okay. UT will lose eventually. They're not going to win the national title. No. That's all I care about.
No. This isn't 2005. It's 2024. Give it one
it
more
is
year.
It is.
But to be fair, they do have an easy run. Like
they do have a very easy
Clemson,
run. Well, they're going to run into Oregon, and Oregon's going to actually be able to score points. And then.
Yeah, and if they beat Oregon, then they probably have to face Georgia. And
again,
I won't put up with that.
You know what they say in baseball? It's the hardest thing in baseball is to beat a team 3 times in a row.
It was all in the game
plan.
This is
not
Texas
baseball.
Lose the first two games so they can face Georgia in the national championship game and win. So I think they plan this out. So
maybe it was a strategy, or maybe not.
Maybe it's all scripted, and we're just pawns.
It could be. I don't know.
Who knows? Only one
I'm
to
excited.
Find out.
We got a couple weeks till this kicks off, but you know, if you need any more college football, it is Army Navy week. That's always exciting. Some great uniforms. It's also the Heisman ceremony this weekend.
Are you excited?
I'm very excited. Yeah, I am going. Myself, Tucker Austin, and Chris Carino will be in attendance for Friday and Saturday of the Heisman ceremony. We're hoping to get a lot of content. Hopefully, some fun things. So stay tuned to our Twitter. Stay tuned to the WFUV Twitter. Stay tuned to the WFUV TikTok. We're going to try and get as much content as we possibly can for all the college football fans and really everyone who listens to WFUV Sports. But it'll be fun, especially if Travis Hunter doesn't win. Not because I'm a Travis Hunter hater. I just think because it'd be such a shock and there'd be some great content that came out of Ashton Gentry winning. But at this point, it does look like Travis Hunter's going to win. The only thing I really have to say about the finalists is I would have rather seen Scatto get in over Dylan Gabriel, but I can't really fault them for putting the best player on the best team.
Yeah.
As a finalist, you know, it is what it is. I'm really glad Cam Ward still got in because he had an incredible season. What are y'all thoughts on the Heisman finalists? I think we all probably think Travis Hunter's going to win at this point.
I really don't hate it.
Whether or not we want Travis Hunter to win, I think that's probably what's going to happen.
I don't hate these finalists. I think these are all well-deserving players in the NCAA. My answer will not change. It's Ashton Gentry is my Heisman. Even if he doesn't win, he's still my Heisman.
Unfortunately, you don't get a vote.
Unfortunately, I don't. But if I did, I would vote. We made the same argument last week. We went around and we said like our 1-2s and 3s, and those, all 3 of those, I think are pretty much in. I don't really have a lot to say. I really like Ashton Gentry because he's just, you know, his story is so cool, and we'll keep up with the Twitter to see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, both of these players would win like in their own season. Like Gentry would have ran away with the award.
Probably going back to Burrow.
I mean, yeah, I think
so. What, Jane Daniels? No, Caleb Williams wouldn't beat either of them. Who was before Caleb? Oh, was that Is that Devontae Smith? No, that was 20.
No, that was like, was that before Burrow?
So last year was Jane Daniels. The year before that was Caleb Williams. So that was 2022. So 2021 was Devontae Smith. 2020, did they even have a Heisman?
Surely not, right?
It was Devontae Smith.
2020 is Devontae Smith. So who's 2021?
Bryce Young.
Bryce Young, oh, right, yeah. So.
Yeah, I think he's winning.
Well, okay, so maybe Devontae Smith beats one of them. Because Devontae Smith had a crazy season. Yeah. So we'll say until the last, so the 3 quarterbacks, the 3 last quarterbacks who have won it, definitely would not beat either of Travis Hunter, Ashton Gentry, for sure.
But could they have beaten Cam Ward? or Dylan Gabriel? If we're comparing quarterback to quarterback.
I think Cam Ward had a better season than definitely Caleb Williams, definitely Bryce Young. I don't know if he had a better season than Jane Daniels did last year. And, you know, they had pretty similar seasons in terms of record. Neither team really was a playoff contender. Neither team had a great defense. Both teams really relied on the quarterback to have crazy seasons, and they did. So, you know, Cam Ward, I think, versus Jaden Daniels last year would have been a pretty interesting one. But I don't, who knows? It's a really good Heisman.
It's a really good group of people.
It's a really great group of people who had some really great seasons. Dylan Gabriel kind of snuck in there because he's the best player on the best team. I would have loved to see Cam Scottabell get some love. There's a couple other players, you know. Teteroa McMillan had a really good season. He's insane. But as a receiver, you have to be on a good team too. So, you know, there's that. But I think they got it, you know, as right as there's not a whole lot of reason to be upset with the Heisman finalists, especially when, you know, it's a two-horse race.
Yeah, I mean, it was either going to be Jente or Travis Hunter. So, like, the other two people don't really matter. I mean, it's just recognition. Like, and then Cam Ward, I think, was the third best player this season. And then the fourth one, like, I think you pretty much have to give it to the clear best player on the clearly best team this season. So, yep. I mean, you can't be, like, super upset with it. I mean, just the only, like, sort of complaints I have is that we don't get to see Travis Hunter or Cam Ward play in a significant game again. I mean, the Bulls, especially with this new playoff expansion.
Colorado plays BYU. Like, they're in the same conference. So, them playing in a bowl game is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. It's a historically Big 12 versus Pac 12 bowl game.
So they just kept it for this season?
So I guess they're saying Colorado's a Pac 12 team, but then if you're going to say Colorado's a Pac 12 team, then BYU's a Mountain West team. Or, sorry, an independent. Like, I think that's it's a conference game should never happen in bowl games. It's very dumb. And then you got Cam Ward playing in the Pop Tart Bowl. He said he's going to play.
Seriously?
So.
I'm surprised by that because
his exact quote was he's going to throw for 1,000 yards.
I heard that. Because he's crazy.
Yeah, so I mean, if he plays in the Pop-Tart Bowl and then he eats a life-size Pop-Tart, I would love to see that. That'll be awesome. If he's going to play, that's awesome. I mean, he's a fifth-year senior at this point, so you might as well play.
Yeah, one last rad couldn't hurt.
Yeah, exactly. He obviously loved college football enough to stay as long as he did, so.
Doesn't everybody? It feels like everybody's staying for six, seven years.
A&M just got a transfer quarterback from UAB who's going to be playing his seventh season of college football.
Gotta love college football that much.
Like, what are we doing here? Get a job. Join the real world.
Grow up,
exactly. Also, fun fact, this has nothing to do with college football. It's just college sports in general. UT has the oldest player in college baseball at 25 and 200 and something days. And he went to my alma mater, Strake Jesuit in Houston.
No, he didn't. Fun story.
He's a year older than my brother, who just graduated from his MBA. My brother just got his MBA.
And there's a guy playing. That's insane.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so there's that.
Oh.
Fun fact, that's the state of college sports right now, is where you have 25-year-old men playing against these, like, 17-year-olds, and then you're shrinking. This isn't a college baseball podcast. I could go on and on about the state of college baseball right now, but we're in a great state of college football. We've had a great episode. Either you have anything else you got to get off your chest before the end of this episode hits.
I don't know how I feel about Bill Belichick being the next
UNC coach.
Oh,
yeah, that's crazy.
That's insane.
Kurt, how much time do we have back there? Do we have time to talk about?
Let's just get something off our chest about this.
We can talk Bill Belichick.
This is crazy. Who would do this? You just doubt.
Did you say he sent a 400-page manifesto to the board of trustees and saying I will come here, but you have to agree to everything in this? 400 pages. What are you talking about, Bill? Take a breath, my guy. It's okay. What could you possibly have in a 400-page? He called it his Bible. What is in there? I'm so interested.
I think he just wanted, like, full control of everything. I mean, he just wants to run.
His son has to be the next coach after he's done.
He has to pass it down to him. But, like, I mean, he did this with the Patriots where he controlled basically every aspect of this. And I think he just wants to replicate that again. And I think
in a college football setting, that's not possible.
He's actually said, I think part of it was that they're going to hire a GM who's going to run all the NIL. They're going to hire a recruiting guy who's going to be in charge of all the recruiting. Bill has said he is not going to recruit. He is playing. He is the coach. That is what he's doing. He's not recruiting, which I think it's a bold choice to take, but also.
But, like, imagine you're, like,
you're
a 17-year-old.
You're also the greatest NFL coach of all time, so you're, like.
And you're going to play at UNC.
Like, you're going to UNC, and you get all the Jordan gear. You get, you know, all that fun stuff, and then you get to go play for Bill Belichick. So, like, if you want to go play in the NFL, I don't know if there's a better player, a better coach to go play under, you know,
yeah,
other than Saban, and Saban's gone.
I sort of understand this decision to not let Belichick to not recruit, because, like, imagine you're, like, a 6-year-old kid, and Bill Belichick, like, shows up at your house and tries to recruit you to go play at UNC. Like,
no chance
he just
there.
Does not seem like a nice person, and, I think that's what makes him such a great coach.
He
so
shows
up
with his girlfriend who's the same age as you?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, that's just insane. Apparently, they're also increasing their NIL from $4 million to $20 million.
Where's
that
money coming from? That's
they're
crazy.
Just pulling it out of nowhere. I guess they're just taking away from the basketball program. But
Or maybe academics.
I don't know. Michael Jordan is like, well, whatever. Just take all my money.
Yeah.
I don't know. Jordan Brand.
Crazy.
Yeah, that is such a crazy story. I'm interested, and I'll definitely be tuned in to how that plays out, because it'll be fun. Especially, I think the least shocking thing is that he's requiring his son to be the next coach after he steps down.
Because he's crazy.
His son is, I think, the offensive coordinator at
Washington.
At Washington, yeah. Pretty good. I mean, they've had an okay offense. I mean, not a whole lot of talent there, but especially when you got Will Rogers, the 47-year-old quarterback playing for you, former Mississippi State guy. But it's definitely an interesting thing to come out of this. Oh, other head coaching news that I thought was kind of awesome or interesting or weird is that Marshall's head coach, after going 10-2, left Marshall. And he's going to 1-11 Southern Miss.
In the same conference. Right.
So he left Marshall, who won their conference, and he's going to Southern Miss, who was dead last in their conference and won one game. Like, what did Marshall do to this man that he decided that he has to go to the worst team and make them better? And then also, I think the entire Marshall football team is going to enter the transfer portal, our reports I've seen. Like, literally the entire roster is going to leave.
It's got to be
an
internal issue.
So what happened at Marshall?
It's got to be an internal issue. Something so classified that nobody knows about.
Yeah, I don't know. So some fun coaching stories going on in the college football world as everybody else in the sport looks towards the playoff.
And
a couple of these teams
the
are already starting their off season. Sad times. But that is all we have for this first rendition of college football Gridiron postseason. I am Barrett Spreitzer, along with Isabella Terracini and Thomas Tisdale. In the booth for most of this episode was Kurt Sipple. Thank you very much, and have a great day.